Good day from Wall Street. This is Jack Marks for Wall Street Reporter. Today I'm speaking with Anthony Milewski. He is the chairman and CEO of Cobalt 27 Capital Corp. Stock symbol is KBLT on the TSX Venture and CBLLF over the counter. Anthony, welcome.
Hey, Jack. Thanks for having me on the show today.
Absolutely. Anthony, before we get into the business model and some of your recent acquisition announcements, can you tell us, you know, why you chose to focus the company on Cobalt? You know, what's the investment thesis for Cobalt, and, you know, why is there so much interest in the market?
Glad you walk you through it. So I think even before that, you have to step back a little bit, and we're sitting at the cusp of fundamental change in two of the most important industries in the world. And the first one is the automobile industry, and the second one is the energy industry. And, you know, in the automobile industry, we're seeing this tremendous shift away from gasoline cars to, you know, autonomous vehicles, self-driving vehicles that are powered by batteries. And that's happening. And it's, you know, it's something that a few years ago was probably hard to imagine. And, you know, today we're looking at adoption rates, you know, in some cases, you know, in California, 10% of all new car sales were electric vehicles a month ago when they were rolling out the Model 3 at Tesla. And in Canada, you had something similar with 8%. So these tremendous adoption rates for the electric vehicle. And then I think the next step after that, of course, is autonomous driving, which is being tested in Arizona and other places. I think the second part of the story, of course, is just a complete transformation of the energy industry. You know, 50% of crude goes into automobiles. People don't really realize that. And that number goes as high as 75% when you include transportation more broadly. So we're talking about a structural change in two really important industries. And, you know, as a professional investor, I was sitting in a fund at the time thinking about how to play those structural changes. You know, being a guy with a hammer, I was looking for nails. I was a metals investor. And I realized that I actually don't know at the end of the day if it's Tesla that's going to win or if it's Volkswagen or if it's a Panasonic that is the way to play. But what I could see definitively was that so long as I believe that there was going to be a winner, the basic materials that comprised of the battery that's powering the electric vehicle were going to be winners, namely cobalt, nickel, and lithium. And so that was kind of, you know, the early days thinking about putting this together and how to play this revolution that's happening in its most basic and simple form without having to really, you know, break down battery companies and think about automobile companies and technology companies, you know, sensors. I really wanted to distill it down into the basic materials and offer that up and create a vehicle that really offered up that as an option.
So basically, you wanted to create a pure play on the electric vehicle demand. That's the idea.
Yeah, initially on the electric vehicle demand, but remember, there's two parts to the story. There's the adoption of electric vehicles, which, you know, I think you could read about just about daily in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times. I mean, everything that's happening. But there's a second step to the story, which the media has entirely not picked up on yet, which is, you know, large scale battery storage that will completely change the economics, in my view, of renewable energy. You know, in the sense that with these battery farms that, you know, Tesla right now is taking the lead on, but I think ultimately there'll be a lot of competition there, where, you know, you can store, for instance, solar during the day and use it at night, or you can stabilize the grid. So initially, this is, of course, will be the electric vehicle story, but I think over the next decade, the story expands beyond electric vehicles into completely kind of transforming renewable energy and our uses of it.
Okay. Oh, so the energy storage for these, you know, the wind farm, solar, all that, that's what you meant. Then, yeah?
There's the first component, which is the lithium-ion battery, which is a kind of a nickel manganese cobalt formulation today. So that's the electric vehicle. But that same battery, if you think about Tesla's Powerwall, I don't know if you followed this, but you can go get a roof put on your house now that's made of solar panels and you know, drop your energy consumption to a point where you're actually, in some places, putting energy into the grid and getting paid for it. So that's the same battery today. you know, there's a slightly different configuration from the battery that goes in the car, but it's still a lithium ion battery. And so I think there are two uses. There's the electric vehicle revolution, which is underway, and then there's the longer term adoption of these energy storage systems that will allow renewable energy to be more economic and also accessed more easily in infrastructure impaired places in Africa and other countries.
Okay. So basically cobalt is used in all these batteries is the bottom line.
That's right. So when you look at the automobile, the lithium-ion battery is the battery du jour, right? It's, you know, if you think back to other technologies, you know, I like to think about VHS versus Betamax. Actually, Betamax, by the way, that kind of dates. Betamax was probably a better technology, but VHS, for a variety of reasons, ultimately won the distribution war and became, for its time, the technology of choice. In the same way, there are a variety of technologies out there, but overwhelmingly, the lithium-ion battery, and in particular, the nickel-manganese-cobalt NMC formulation of that battery has been widely adopted and is planned now for the next decade into these cars. And, you know, that chemistry within the lithium-ion battery is nickel-manganese-cobalt NMC. Everyone saving it for Tesla uses it. And, you know, the key components there are really nickel and cobalt. And, you know, you really need that cobalt in there to stabilize the battery and to add that charge and to really make the car work and run like you expect a car to work.
Okay. So let's get into your business model. Like so people are clear, like what exactly you're doing. It's a, you know, pure play opportunity of, you have a royalty model versus, you know, people might be thinking of traditional, you know, mining companies. How does your model work?
So we're not a mining company at all. You know, we're something more like a Franco-Nevada or Silver Wheaton, which is a royalties and streaming company. Cobalt is a byproduct of nickel mining globally, except for the Congo, where it's a byproduct of, copper. And so what we do is, and we either buy a royalty over the project and say, you know, here's X number of dollars, and we get a 1%, I'm just making up the number, we get a 1% royalty over all your nickel and cobalt for the life of the mine. Or another way of doing it is, you know, you give them an upfront payment, and then you get nickel and cobalt for a structured period of time. And the reason, as I said earlier, is because cobalt is a byproduct of other primary products. And so it's not usually the driver of economics. And so what we do is effectively create financially settled contracts with the miners to give the investor exposure directly to the cobalt. And, you know, this is common in oil and gas. I mean, I think for the investors who are more familiar with the oil and gas sector, you know, you see that in with royalties. It's something, if you're trying to find a, you know, a frame of reference, I think that's one way to think about it. Or in the precious, think about a Franco Nevada or a Wheaton Precious.
Okay. So basically, essentially Cobalt 27 is going to get a percentage of, you know, all cobalt sales coming out of these mines.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to think about it.
Okay.
Obviously, each one of these transactions has some nuance, but it's a way of isolating the exposure to cobalt. And also, we have nickel exposure, which are the key ingredients in these batteries' chemistry. And so, you know, when an investor's thinking about how they want to play it, like, you know, maybe they should own an NVIDIA, which is a, you know, a sensor maker, or maybe they should own a Tesla. Like, that's, of course, for the investor to decide. But certainly, if you've made the decision to own some aspect of the electric vehicle value chain because you believe people are going to buy these cars, then what you know for sure is that cobalt's going to be a winner because it's in every single one of these cars and every single one of the batteries.
Okay. And you also have physical holdings of cobalt right now, right?
That's right. We have around 2,900 metric tons of cobalt, and it's one of the largest single stockpiles of cobalt in the world outside of the Chinese government. And it helps form the basis for our balance sheet. You know, we use it for leverage And it also gives the investor access to investing in cobalt. You know, cobalt is not an exchange-traded product in the same way that copper is. There is an LME warrant, but it's completely illiquid, and it actually doesn't even trade in line with where the actual market is. Metals Bulletin is the way that cobalt is priced, not the LME warrant. And so it's a unique metal in that, unlike, say, copper or gold, it's very simple to trade for a professional investor, or even, frankly, it's really easy to trade for anyone. There's plenty of access products out there. Whereas for cobalt, we're sort of the only access product.
Huh. So there's no futures on cobalt. There's no other trading except essentially your stock gives them that pure play.
Technically there is an LME warrant, but you know it simply doesn't trade. And when it does trade, you know it's completely disconnected from the actual price of cobalt. Now, I would argue that it's a failed contract. For a variety of reasons, and I can touch on it briefly, the basic reason is that consumers of cobalt use a particular form. You know, when it comes in a metal, they use a round or an ingot. You know, an ingot would be like a loaf of bread. A round would look like a large silver dollar. And they build their entire industrial process around receiving cobalt that's in a certain form. And the LME cobalt is deliverable in, you know, kind of a bunch of different forms, and that's not useful for end users. So you never really had the contract adopted by industry, and there's more nuance to it, of course. It's probably not a fair shake there, but for a variety of reasons, the contract hasn't been adopted, and it's never got liquid, and it doesn't reflect the price. And so that kind of allowed us to step into the market and create an alternative for people who are looking for that proxy.
So what's the current market value of your physical cobalt position?
So the current market value, if I'll give you a mark to market here, let's just do it for you. It's probably $175 million US.
Okay. US, okay, ballpark, okay.
Yeah, but give or take, right? Like on any given, actually, it might be slightly higher. It's probably between $175 and $200 million US.
Okay, fair enough. So it's pretty close to the market value of the company, almost.
Yeah, no, look, the stock is trading incredibly cheap right now. So, you know, the physical position almost matched the market cap of the company, and that doesn't attribute any value to the Voisey's Bay stream that we paid, you know, $300 million for last year, or any of our other royalties. And yeah, that's a function, I think, of a broader market sell-off going into last year in the materials space. And, you know, frankly, we had raised a lot of capital in the last 18 months, and some of the people have rotated out of the EV thematic or, you know, liquidated the position. And so I think the stock was severely oversold kind of at the end of last year. And you know, coming back into this year, we've actually seen some buying.
Okay. So, the metal is located in what warehouses in is it in London? Is it in the U.S.? Where do you have this?
Yeah, so in a few locations in Europe and the U.S. I think the key point there is that they're LME fully insured, fully bonded warehouses, and so you're not taking, you know, risk that you know. I'll give you an example. It's been widely publicized. There was a theft at one of the warehouses where we stored our cobalt, and you know, a bunch of different people had metal stolen, and including us. And we submitted a claim to our insurance company and had it paid back. Now that's extremely rare, but I think the point is that the metal is fully secured and insured at the LME bonded warehouses.
Okay, and do you sell off part the position at any point, or you intend to keep it as or grow the position?
We're not growing the position. Obviously, it's an asset of the company, and you know, we think that it's a strategic asset that, you know, through the cycle will be important to a battery maker. So, you know, we opportunistically kind of rationalize assets in our balance sheet, whether that's the physical position or whether that's streams and royalties. But we view all of the assets of the company as strategic. And so we're constantly kind of making sure that the asset balances make sense. And we don't trade it day to day, but everything is possible.
Okay. Sort of like the U.S., what is it, the Strategic Oil Reserve?
Yeah, exactly.
So where are the royalty assets? Where are all the mines based? And maybe you can get into the details of some of the key assets.
Yeah, sure. So in Canada we've got a royalty over Dumont and Turnagain, two of the largest construction ready / exploration nickel sulfide and nickel deposits, out there. So that's really interesting. So there's a pipeline there. And then we have a stream on Voisey's Bay. That was where we kind of last year put up $300 million, where we get 32.6% of finished cobalt. That mine starts, January 1st, 2021. So that brings in a significant amount of free cash flow. Down in Australia, we've got a couple royalties, and we recently announced a transaction with Highland Pacific on their nickel cobalt joint venture interest, which once again brings in free cash flow to the company. So we have Australia, we have Canada, and then we have PNG.
Okay, so you don't have anything in the Congo or in China or in any of those areas?
Yeah, nothing in China, but especially nothing in the Congo. We have intentionally avoided the Congo. With cobalt in particular, you have conflict issues around artisanal mining, and around ethical sourcing of cobalt. And so we've taken the view that if some of the major mining companies, and you can read about all the disasters going on, have been unable to navigate the Congo, that we don't think we can navigate it. So we've completely avoided and actually represent our shareholders that we'll continue to avoid the Congo because we just don't think that makes sense for us to go there. Also, we think there's strategic value in owning the assets outside of the Congo. We think that if you're a battery maker, when you come and you do business with us, you know definitively that you're not getting conflict cobalt because all the cobalt we deal in is mined and processed and smelted outside of the Congo.
Okay, and also I think the Congo's, their political stability is sometimes in question.
Oh yeah, they've had elections, last week, and they still haven't announced who the winner is. Although I think a charity run by the Catholic Church has said there's a definitive winner, and some people in the U.S. government has implied that the person that won wasn't the chosen party. So it's kind of descending into a mess. I think that's just the point. We don't want to have shareholders' dollars in a place like that because we can't control for those type of risks.
Okay. So the royalties you have now cash flows coming in from these royalty interests?
So Voisey's Bay cash flow starts in 2021, and Highland Pacific, Ranry Nickel is actually what it's called. That one comes in as soon as the deal closes and it's settled. So, we anticipate free cash flow in 2019.
So this year you're going to have free cash flow coming into the company.
Exactly.
What about the possibility of a dividend?
Yeah. So look, we've told our shareholders that we intend to pay a dividend. We also have something called a normal course issuer bid in Canada, which is the ability to buy back shares. And, I think what we guide people towards is that when that cash flow starts later in the year, we'll assess the market. And, you can either do a dividend, you can do a buyback, you could do a dividend buyback, or you could do neither. And I think everything will be in the context of the market. But certainly we're committed to some version of a dividend / buyback when that cash flow comes in.
Okay. Can you kind of give us a picture of, what Cobalt 27 will look like, 2-3 years out once once you have these royalties coming in? Like, what's your vision for the company?
Yeah, I mean, depending on the price of nickel and cobalt, you could be looking at tremendous free cash flow. There's only really three or four employees at Cobalt 27, so the overhead is very low. And so this could really be a proxy on the EV adoption that has a very low cost structure and, generates a dividend. I mean, that's how I would see it, is that, it has a potential for a tremendous dividend over and through the cycle, and really can be part of a portfolio around the adoption of the electric vehicle. In fact, I would argue that it's maybe one of the purest proxies for the adoption of the electric vehicle, because really, we don't know who's going to win. Is it Tesla? Is it VW? Is it Ford? No one knows yet. But what I know for sure is, if there is a winner, then Cobalt is going to be a winner. And so, being part of a portfolio for someone who's trying to capture that, I think it's important to have us in there.
Is it possible to, I don't know if you can make a projection, but based on current prices, what kind of cash flow do you expect, by 2021?
Yeah, I don't think I would make a forward-looking statement, except to say that, we're covered by a bunch of analysts, and they've done the work, and I think, I think that's pretty readily available. In particular, in Canada, we're covered by BMO, Canaccord, Cormark, 8 Capital, GMP, Haywood, National Bank, Numis, Paradigm in Scotia, and then finally TD. So covered by, kind of 10 or 12 analysts. And they all have their numbers, and I think, some of them are pretty accurate. It's a pretty easy model to run.
Okay. So I guess anybody interested, they could look at those reports.
And if you go to our website, all the analysts are listed with their email addresses, and you can reach out directly and get those reports for free.
Okay. Anthony, can you tell us more about your background and also the other key members of the team? That you said that the whole company, you only have basically 4 people in the company, so it's a very low overhead operation.
Yeah, so myself, I spent the majority of my career at funds investing in basic materials. Previously, Paul Investments, and prior to that, Fiber Management in New York. And so my background is really, thinking about the world and allocating capital to ideas in the mining and material space. Justin Cochran, he was at Sandstorm prior to joining us. And prior to that, he was MBF as a banker. He spent his entire career, really since the advent of streaming, working and transacting on streams and royalties. I think he's transacted on over 50. Martin Vidra, who's our head of strategy, he was at Sherritt for his entire career, actually, working on nickel cobalt projects globally, really an expert in nickel and cobalt. And then we have someone who's responsible for our corporate communications, Betty. So I think that's the entire team. What you see there, and myself, is someone who understands finance and capital markets. In Justin, it's the structuring and the details around the transactions. And then in Martin, you have really one of the top experts in nickel and cobalt mines. And then on top of that, I think something that we've done, which is pretty unique, is we've put together an advisory board, which is unpaid unless kind of called upon. But you have people like, Ted Miller from Ford. He's a senior manager of energy storage and materials. You have Dr. Patil, who was the head of LG Chem in North America, and Neil Warburton, mine builder. So we also have a very deep advisory board with a few more guys on there who are really able to be resources for the company if we need to reach in there and get further help.
Okay. Now, one thing is, what's the difference between, royalties and streaming? How is that defined?
Yes, so there's nuance, but a royalty typically is, and by the way, all these things are bespoke. There is a tax definition that varies from country to country, but just the most basic form is a royalty is you get 1% of the revenue from the mine. That's the royalty. So if a dollar is produced, you get 1%. If $100 is produced, you get another 1%. So it's just a very simple, straightforward kind of financial contract. Streams are a bit different because typically a stream is it's almost like a prepayment, a version of a prepayment, although it's not a prepayment because a prepayment would sit on the balance sheet as debt for the issuer, whereas a stream doesn't necessarily. So, you give this upfront payment, and then you get delivery of material for some, maybe for the life of mine, maybe for 20 years, and then you have an ongoing payment. And what that does is it gives you potentially access to the physical in certain contracts, and then other contracts are financially settled. So either way, you're really getting a financial contract, which gives you direct exposure to the underlying metal. So, what you know is if you have a 1% exposure to all cobalt revenue, I mean, it's very transparent and straightforward. If cobalt price goes up, you make more money. If it goes down, you make less money. And similar with the streams.
Okay. What are the key milestones that you have coming up over the next 12 months that investors should keep an eye on?
Yeah, I think the key milestone is really closing our Highland Pacific transaction, because that brings cash flow into the company and then allows us to focus on dividend and some of that sort of stuff. So obviously that's the key milestone. And that's, probably, I would say, Q2 of this year.
Okay. Let's sum up, in your opinion, what are the key value drivers, investors, should take into account when looking at Cobalt 27? I guess, in other words, what would you say are the top three reasons to buy the stock today?
Look, the stock is trading at a massive discount to net asset value. So it was tremendously sold off last year. A few of the funds were liquidating. There was tax loss selling. So just if nothing changes in the world, we're trading at a material discount to the sum of the parts. And you don't have to have reports that can demonstrate that. But notwithstanding that point, I've seen the key reason to own this over the next year, two, 3 years, is we are a proxy for the adoption of the electric vehicle in a way I don't believe you can find anywhere else. I think there are other proxies, but then there's a second layer of risk there. Do people buy a Tesla versus a Volkswagen vehicle? I don't know. So I think really this proxy feature, this ability to really be right by owning us, if people buy electric vehicles, is critical. And I think that's really the most important point. If you believe in the EV adoption story, like you own us, even if it's part of a basket of companies, because you will be right on the basic materials in the coming years as adoption accelerates.
Okay. On that note, Anthony, I want to thank you, and we look forward to following the story in the months ahead.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate coming on your show.